They're nice books, really, all of them. They're from past years, ARSC Award candidates, actually.
Vince, we always do your bidding.
Oh, what a guy. Anyway, we're going to end the bidding at the beginning of the business meeting, so you still have some time. All right, our next speaker will be talking about the Philadelphia Orchestra's Centennial CD Collection. His name is Mark Obert Thorne. He is an audio restoration engineer and reissue producer whose work has appeared on such labels as Pearl, Bidulf, Romaphone, and most recently, Naxos Historical. He's here to talk about his latest project, the Philadelphia Orchestra's Centennial CD Collection. Mark Obert Thorne.
Thanks, Vinny. Thank you. On November 16th, 2000, the Philadelphia Orchestra will celebrate the 100th anniversary of its first concert. To commemorate the event, the orchestra is bringing out a 12-CD set featuring previously unpublished broadcasts and commercial recordings. Although the orchestra has produced single discs in connection with local radiothons over the past two decades, this is the first time it's produced a multi-disc set to be marketed worldwide along the lines of what the New York Philharmonic, the Chicago Symphony, and the Cleveland Orchestra have done over the past few years. The Philadelphia Orchestra appointed me to be the artistic consultant, essentially the producer, for this set. And in that role, I have three main functions. First, to suggest the overall structure of the set. Second, to recommend particular performances to be included in the set. And third, to advise the orchestra on the selection of a remastering engineer for the project, a position which was set up to be separate from and reporting to the artistic consultant. And it was my pleasure to recommend for this job Ward Marston, whose reputation in the field is second to none. The structure which I recommended for this set divides it into three general parts. First, the music directors, devoted to the four Philadelphia Orchestra conductors to hold that title who made recordings, Leopold Stokowski, Eugene Normandy, Riccardo Muti, and Wolfgang Sawallisch. Second, great guest conductors, including composers conducting their own works. And finally, great soloists, including both singers and instrumentalists. Now, except for the two living music directors, we decided to limit our choices of artists to those who are no longer actively performing. The only exception besides Maestros Muti and Sawallisch is Daniel Barenboim, who appears as an accompanist for two items. In choosing particular performances for this set, we attempted to satisfy three goals. First, to present the orchestra in the kind of repertoire with which it's closely associated in the public mind. Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff, Brahms, Wagner, and the like. Second, to spotlight particular contemporary composers whose works have been championed by the orchestra throughout the 20th century. Composers such as Sibelius, Stravinsky, Shostakovich, Schoenberg, Varese, and Barber. And finally, to make the set particularly appealing to collectors, not only by featuring previously unpublished commercial recordings and broadcasts, but also by presenting artists who, for one reason or another, never recorded with the orchestra or never recorded the repertoire that we hear them perform here. In this same vein, we try to present some unexpected combinations of artist and repertoire. For example, Bruno Walter conducting The Afternoon of a Faun, Klaus Tennstedt's Barbara Adagio, Muti's Varese and Sawallisch's Martinu, which shed new light on both the performer and the work. Now, putting together a set like this requires the cooperation of many parties, artists, their estates, record labels, and so on. It also requires the help of various sound archives, and so I thought it would be particularly appropriate for this association of four recorded sound collections to key the examples that I'd like to play now to the various archives which have contributed to the project. Now, our first example comes from what at first sight may seem an unlikely source for historic orchestral performances, the AT&T archives. However, if you know that AT&T is now the curator of the records of their former subsidiary, Bell Laboratories, it begins to make some sense. As many of you are aware, Leopold Stokowski invited engineers from Bell Labs to the Academy of Music in 1931 in order for them to test advanced recording techniques. Between November 1931 and May 1932, portions of a number of rehearsals and concerts by the Philadelphia Orchestra were recorded in wide frequency range sound. Some were even taken down in stereo. 20 years ago, Ward Marston and I worked on the project to bring out 2 LPs worth of Stokowski Philadelphia recordings from these experiments. For the current set, we've gone back to this source for 2 items. First, a complete live Beethoven Fifth with Stokowski, and the recording which I'm about to play, the transformation music from Act I of Wagner's Parsifal, conducted by Fritz Reiner. At that time, Reiner was on the staff of the Curtis Institute and was a frequent guest conductor of the Philadelphians. This is the earliest recording of his yet published. Let's hear a bit of it now from the Saturday evening concert of November 28th, 1931 in the Academy of Music. Conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra in 1931. The Library of Congress was the source for some of the most fascinating items on the set. Live broadcasts from the mid-1940s of Zoltán Kodály conducting his Peacock Variations, and Igor Stravinsky leading the divertimento from The Fairy's Kiss. But by far the rarest item that they supplied was a live performance, which was not broadcast, featuring the 23-year-old William Capel as soloist in the Brahms D minor piano concerto, a work which he never recorded commercially. This performance with Eugene Ormandy leading the Philadelphians was given in New York's Carnegie Hall on December 11, 1945. Someone, perhaps Capel himself, arranged to have the performance professionally recorded on 33 and a third glass-based acetate discs. The balance in the recording heavily favors the piano, which is not necessarily a bad thing if you want to hear exactly what Capel is doing. Ward Marston spent 2 days in Washington working alongside the Library of Congress's own engineers to extract the best sound from the original discs. And I think you'll agree that the effort shows in the clarity and the presence of this recording. Here now is an excerpt from the first movement.
Thank you.
William Capel with Eugene Ormandy conducting in 1945. Now, probably the most well-known of the guest conductors in our set is Arturo Toscanini. He appeared with the Philadelphia Orchestra on a number of occasions between 1930 and 1944 and made a famous series of recordings with the orchestra during the 1941-42 season, which have been reissued on CD. However, none of his concerts were broadcast, nor were any of them privately recorded. We still wanted to find a way to include Toscanini in this collection, and I recalled from a visit that I had made several years ago to the Rodgers and Hammerstein archive of Lincoln Center, that their Toscanini Legacy collection contained some portions of rehearsals which had been taken down on 78 RPM lacquer discs during the Victor recording sessions. One of them was just a brief excerpt from the Tchaikovsky Pathétique, played straight through without any talking. The other, however, contained extended excerpts from his rehearsal for the recording of the Queen Mab Scherzo from Berlioz's Romeo and Juliet, taken down on February 9, 1942. In the portions of the rehearsal that I'm going to play next, which incidentally were the flat tape of which was transferred by our own Seth Winter, who's in our audience today, you'll hear a very different Toscanini from the caricature of a tantrum-throwing martinet with which he has so often been saddled. He always had a good working relationship with the Philadelphians, and in this sequence, you'll hear him speak to them in almost fatherly tones. I know it is difficult, very difficult. Try it. This music is non natural. It must be magic. Then he goes on to tell them the story of Queen Mab, so small, piccolissimo, in a coach. He also reveals the kind of chamber music approach he was looking for in this work. Try to hear around you, not only play for yourselves only. After this, we'll skip to the end of the rehearsal, where Toscanini calls to Victor producer Charles O'Connell, O'Connell, we will try. Then we'll hear the finished product from that rehearsal, the actual commercial recording in a new transfer made from the original metal parts by Ward Marston, which shows how good these records can be made to sound. Let's listen to it now.
Thank you.
Arturo Toscanini and the Philadelphia Orchestra. You can hear more of the rehearsal and the complete commercial recording on the set. By far the greatest amount of material in this collection comes from the Philadelphia Orchestra's own archives, and we've been particularly fortunate in that regard. Let me explain by way of a contrast. In his introduction to the excellent award-winning New York Philharmonic Historic Broadcasts 10 CD set, which came out a couple of years ago, Sedge Clark wrote that the Philharmonic held almost no master tapes of broadcasts dating before 1975 and had to rely on off-the-air home recordings for some of the material included in the set. The Philadelphia Orchestra, on the other hand, has in its archives the master tapes of almost every broadcast going back to 1960. Moreover, every one of these concerts was taped in stereo, years before other organizations, such as the Philharmonic and the Metropolitan Opera, began regular stereo broadcasts. In addition to this, since the time when regular radio broadcasts ceased in the early 1990s, the orchestra has digitally taped virtually every one of its concerts held in the Academy, providing an even more thorough documentation of its activities than existed during its broadcast days. As a result, we've been able to draw upon a treasure trove of performances recorded in excellent modern sound, including a live 1961 Tchaikovsky violin concerto with Michael Rabin, a 1964 Mahler Fifth with Hermann Scherchen, Jacqueline Dupre performing the Saint-Saëns First Cello Concerto in 1971, Sviatoslav Richter in Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 17 from 1970, and many others. The recording I'd like to play next comes from the orchestra's own archives. Copland's Lincoln Portrait from a concert given at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center on August 5th, 1976. This performance features a veritable dream team. Aaron Copland at the podium with the 79-year-old Marian Anderson, the lady from Philadelphia herself, narrating. To hear her speak during this bicentennial summer with such clear diction and such absolute conviction is truly a goosebump-inducing experience. Let's hear a little from the end of the performance.
When he spoke of democracy,
1976 with Aaron Copland conducting. Miss Anderson also appears in the Great Singers portion of the set in an unpublished 1939 Victor recording of Brahms' Von Ewiger Liebe, conducted by Ormandy, from the same session which produced their classic Alto Rhapsody. Others who appear on this CD include Beverly Sills, Dorothy Maynor, and Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau. Several of the items here are from the orchestra's annual fundraising gala concerts. The galas held in 1962 and 63 were conducted by Leopold Stokowski, who is heard in this set, partnering Joan Sutherland in the Lucia Mad scene, Franco Corelli, and George London. From the gala concert of January 20th, 1962, we're including an electrifying immolation scene from Gitterdämmerung, where one of the great Wagner conductors, Stokowski, accompanies one of the greatest Wagnerian singers of all time, Birgit Nielsen. Let's hear a bit of that now. Stokowski with Birgit Nielsen in 1962. Not all of the items in this set are drawn from live performances or broadcasts, As one of the most frequently recorded orchestras of all time, we felt that it was entirely appropriate to include some commercial recordings. In keeping with our goal of presenting selections with high collector interest, we tried to include in this category items which had never been released on CD before, such as Stokowski's 1960 Columbia stereo recording of the love music from Acts 2 and 3 of Tristan, and Virgil Thompson conducting a 1945 recording of his Five Portraits, which has been newly transferred from the original Columbia lacquers. We also included some items which had never previously been published at all, such as the Marian Anderson Brahms song that I mentioned earlier. One other previously unpublished commercial recording we're featuring, however, did not come from the original recording company, but from a private archive. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that it's one of the most eagerly awaited recording releases of all time, the 1934 world premiere recording of the Sibelius Violin Concerto, with Jascha Heifetz joining Leopold Stokowski and the Philadelphia Orchestra. This was recorded in Victor's Camden Church Studios on Christmas Eve, 1934, incidentally at the same session during which Rachmaninoff recorded his Paganini Rhapsody. One wishes that Charles O'Connell had said something like, since you guys are here, you want to do a Kreutzer or something, but it was not to be. Now, Heifetz and Stokowski had not given a series of concert performances of this work immediately preceding the recording session, and reportedly at the session they clashed over dynamics and tempo. Heifetz refused to approve the recording and ordered the masters destroyed. He did, however, hold on to his test pressings, which eventually found their way to Stanford University's archive of recorded sound. In order to obtain the best possible transfer, the Philadelphia Orchestra paid to have one of the Stanford archivists hand carry these unique discs from, by air from California to Ward Marston's studio just outside Philadelphia. Hearing the performance 65 years later, it's hard to see why Heifetz withheld his approval. His clashes in this studio seem to ratchet up an already intense interpretation into one which glows with a white heat. From this recording is our final excerpt. I'd like now to play publicly for the first time ever the complete third movement of the concerto. And while we're listening, I'm going to pass around a handout which has the contents of the entire set. Thank you. and Stokowski in Sibelius, 1934. The Philadelphia Orchestra Centennial Collection will be released this September. Plans are for it to be available through the orchestra's website, which is shown on the back of the handout that I passed out to you, through phone orders, and in selected record stores worldwide. Information on ordering the set will become available on the orchestra's website as the release date approaches. I'd like to thank you for your attention, and also thank the Philadelphia Orchestra for sponsoring my trip to speak to you today. And now I think we have a couple of minutes for some questions, if anyone has anything that they'd like to ask.
Did you consider any performances conducted by Pierre Monteux or St. Thomas Beecham?
Yes, we did consider a couple of Monteux performances. In fact, originally we were going to include a performance from 1945 of his conducting the Prokofiev Romeo and Juliet Suite No. 1. And we got fairly far along in the remastering process of this, but then it became apparent that there were some problems with the recording that we had to leave it out and substitute something else for it. But yes, we did consider Monteux. Beecham, we had not come up with any really prime sources for some of his early 40s broadcasts, so we did not include Beecham for this collection. Any other questions? Yes. I hope that they will follow up. We don't have any concrete plans yet because we're still in the process of finalizing the production of the set.
You made some personal notes, though.
Yes, yes, I did.
Are any of the 31 or 32 stereo recordings included?
No, all of the 31, 32 stereo recordings were included in those two LPs that were released in around 1980. That's the extent of the stereo.
As an aside, is there any plans on redoing that?
Not at the moment, although I know that Ward would like to redo those transfers, and I think that he would like to see the orchestra bring them out in some form or another. Any other questions? Okay, well,
thank you.
I'll be available in the back in case anyone wants to talk further about the project. Thanks.
Okay.